involves contractual compliance as well as technical collaborations. So the point of today's session is a workshop on the technical aspect of that and to get your input into the technical aspects and to come up with some ideas for technical collaborations for improving the WHOIS. So I want to thank you, and that's kind of the message that Kurt asked me to deliver on his behalf, and I fully support that, as does ICANN, and we'd like to start the session now with a short presentation by me of three slides that basically just define the vocabulary we'll be using in the session so that we're all talking about the same thing. So if I use a word, you'll know what I mean, and if you use a word, I'll know what you mean. Okay, so basically, yeah, okay. I can read it up there. There's three ways we'll be using the word WHOIS. One is we'll be referring to the protocol itself, the WHOIS protocol that's defined in RFC 3912. So we'll refer to that as the WHOIS protocol. We won't just call it WHOIS. We'll say WHOIS protocol. So we'll be making sure that everyone realizes at that point we're talking about a standard, a technical standard. Then there's the WHOIS service. And this includes the WHOIS protocol as well as the web-based WHOIS. This is the interface, basically, that is applied so that people can query the WHOIS. So the WHOIS service is the service that's available, not just the underlying technology. And then finally, WHOIS is kind of used as a generic term, domain, and we're going to call it domain registration data. And so a lot of people, no matter what the technology is or what the way you make the data available, call it WHOIS. It may or may not be based on the WHOIS protocol. It just happens to be, you know, I want to find out who has this domain name. I'm going to go query WHOIS. That WHOIS may or may not be the WHOIS protocol, and it may or may not be the WHOIS service that's based on a web-based WHOIS or a web-based or a WHOIS protocol. So do I have any questions on those three terminologies? We'll refer to things as WHOIS protocol, WHOIS service, or domain name registration data if we just meant the data and the content in a generic form. Yes, Sebastian.
Yeah, just a question of why there is WHOIS in large letter and one with small letter. Is it because its meaning is different or it's the same thing? No, it's not a joke. It's always very difficult to be sure that something is the same.
Well, I was going to make a joke, but since you said it's not a joke, I won't make the joke. But basically, I think it's just an editing error in the slides. I don't think it was intended to mean emphasis on the WHOIS protocol versus the WHOIS service. But I'll refer to Francisco, who typed this for me.
The RFC 3912 and the previous WHOIS services called the WHOIS protocol, all in caps. So we are using that terminology as it is in the RFC. That's the reason why.
Yes. I'm sorry, I don't know your name.
Kathy Kleiman with .org.
Kathy.
Question about the data collected at registration and made available to users. Is that there's different types of data made available at different places, registries, registrars, thick registries, thin registries. Any specifics on that?
This means any registry's data, any registrar data, anything that someone would want to be able to query that they call WHOIS. They'll say, oh, if you want to see what that content is, what that data is, go use WHOIS. And WHOIS is used in a very generic term there, so we're going to call it domain registration data and avoid the term WHOIS.
But without specifying what that data is and that it's very unique subsets depending on where you're looking for it.
Correct.
Hi,
yes.
Ray Daly. Would it also be useful to add a term that refers to the data model within the WHOIS output as a generic phrase as well?
The domain registration data term, and I'll allow Francisco or Steve to correct me if I have it wrong, is more generic. If you were to talk about what the data model might be, I think you would be talking about the WHOIS service, because that talks more about the underlying infrastructure, which means it could be the WHOIS protocol, or it could be a web-based WHOIS, or it could be an SQL database or something like that.
Sorry.
Do I have that correct, Francisco and Steve? And if not, I don't mind being corrected. Go ahead.
I think they wanted to make it.
Probably there are two separate things there then, which is the data model and there's the representation of it within the WHOIS.
Yes, correct.
Correct. And the WHOIS service is more about the representation, and the domain registration data term is more about the content and the data itself.
I wouldn't agree with that. Yes, I wouldn't agree with either of those. The representation is only WHOIS. It's not web-based WHOIS or SQL or anything like that. A web-based WHOIS or something may take that representation and present it as a web-based thing, but there is a very specific representation within WHOIS. And the data model is... The data model is different to the data than the domain registration data, because a very specific data model is created for output in the WHOIS.
So I will defer to Harold to respond to this.
The data model that is implicit in the... There is no data model implicit in the WHOIS protocol. The practice of WHOIS has gotten some consistency between registries, but the practice also varies wildly, not just widely, but wildly between registries.
Now, I'm aware there's no consistency. This is a term for us to describe something that is currently deeply inconsistent, but I'm suggesting that we have a standard term at least for talking about it.
Okay, I get what you're driving at.
So, if you could propose a standard term.
Two, the WHOIS data representation and the WHOIS data model.
Okay, so we'll... Let me just make sure I understand. So we want to get rid of domain registration data term, or we want to add two terms?
Add two terms.
Okay. And it's WHOIS data representation and WHOIS data model. Okay. So for everyone in the room, we'll have these three terms: WHOIS protocol, WHOIS service, domain registration data. Just a second. WHOIS data representation and WHOIS data model, and I'll call on you. Only if you can find a mic that works. You exceeded the allotted minutes, maybe. That was a joke. I didn't mean it seriously. Is that whole bank out? Good.
Okay. Yeah, we found a microphone. If somebody can take a look here, we obviously lost a bank of microphones. So, Jim Galvin from Phileas. I agree with you, Jay, but I think the only clarification I would ask for is, instead of calling it the WHOIS data model and the WHOIS data representation, it should be about a directory services thing. Otherwise, we're tying ourselves to a particular protocol choice. And in terms of calling this domain registration data, we should also generalize the terms that we're looking for.
Okay. Francisco, is this the directory services comment about where we submitted a draft, and so we are willing to consider that? We just wanted to let you know that we'd already put a draft with some other language.
Yes, we are aware that ESAC prefers the term directory services. Unfortunately, we already published the report and we use that terminology, but we are aware in the revised version of this report we will use that terminology. Thanks.
So since we're going to use that terminology going forward, shall we change the terminology we're using today so we start ingraining that idea? It's up to you. It's not my decision.
Sorry, just to clarify on Jim's point again, it's still WHOIS data representation, but it's directory services data model.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. I see where you're going. Sure, for the purposes of this presentation, surely that's what it is.
So let me repeat this to make sure I've got it straight. Okay, we're going to use who is protocol, who is service, domain registration data, is it who is data representation, and then directory services data model. Did everyone get their pens and papers or computers and type that in so we all talk the same language?
Are you going to define those one more time?
I'll define the first three, and I will turn to Jay to define the two that he made up. Jay, why don't you start with your two?
Well, the who is data representation is the format of the text that comes through from the who is, you know, which for many people is key value pairs or something. The directory services data model is the data model that is then used to generate that representation that could generate another representation, such as through IRIS or something else. And that is distinct from the domain registration data model, because it is quite possible to have registries that have different domain registration data models but create the same directory services data model quite deliberately.
Elise, I understand the details on terminology. I would suggest that we move on with the presentation. There is not, the intention of this presentation is not really to go into very much detail in this. So,
I don't think we have to take it any further, Francisco, but I think it's valuable to have a clarification that if we use terms, everyone's going to use the same language. And is everyone satisfied now? Kathy, Jay, Jim? Moving right along. I don't know who's driving the slide deck. That's still me. That's still the terminology. So anyway, this is just a general slide to say what we meant by the who is protocol. I think we've kind of gone over that when we were talking about terminology. It's the standard RFC 3912, the port 43, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone agrees it lacks a few things at this point in time due to modern applications and modern uses. Next slide. And so then the web-based who is service, this is something that's typically offered by registries, registrars, and RIRs. And it's not, it's similar looking on output, but it's not always the same. There's some different functionalities that are offered taking advantage of web capabilities. And next one. And then the domain registration data. This is basically, as we were talking earlier, it covers the data that's actually registered by registries, registrars, etc., and it's the contacts and other types of data. And it's just the content that is then externalized through the other things we've talked about. And now I will turn it over to Harald, who's been kind enough to join us. Harald's from Google. He's also on the board of directors for one more day. This is his last term, and we're very sad to see him go. And he's been experienced in the internet for a long, long time, and definitely with the .no domain.
Thank you, Elise. And the synopsis of this presentation is, who is broken? Give up. So, next slide. There's been some work going on in defining requirements on the WHOIS service. The requirements are quite lengthy. The original WHOIS service, WHOIS protocol definition is 3 pages long, slightly shorter. It's kind of piling stuff on top of something that isn't fit to carry it, and I'll tell you more about why. Next slide. WHOIS is 28 years old by its first definition. It was originally a means of looking up persons in a directory that served the ARPANET. A US thing, which it's actually far older than Unicode. And it was a quite useful protocol at the time. Some implementations of Whois would actually go to your home directory and just pick up a file from there and display it. So some people use it to display their cursor of the day. Some people used it to as a file transfer protocol that wasn't a file transfer protocol. Whois, the protocol has been used for many things and has been extremely useful for those many things. But it was never in the minds of anyone with a smidgen of sanity intended to grow into a global directory service. As Elise said, the protocol is send one line of text, get many lines back. End of story. And there was no standard for the line in, there was no standard for the line out. People were expected to figure it out. And if something went wrong, like the one thing you were queried for didn't exist, well, you sent one line in, you got some lines back. The lines back might say, no such file. But there's no way a machine could tell that no such file was not actually the content of a file. So, and of course, this was in the very trusty old days of the ARPANET, where everyone on the ARPANET expected that if they didn't know every other user on the ARPANET, at least they had some friend in common. And they also expected that if anyone seriously misbehaved on the ARPANET, their ARPA office would kick him off. Wasn't true then. Is definitely not true now. The experiment has run a bit out of hand. So, there was no mechanism for all the things that we have requirements for. And if you give me the next slide, you shouldn't be fooled by the relatively high number of the Whois protocol. The Whois protocol originally had an RFC in the 900 series, one of the 1,000 first RFCs. The only reason it ever got revised was to remove a requirement that the Whois information had to include the telephone number. Because some people were saying that the IETF was forcing ICANN to force registrars to include telephone number information in Whois databases, because the language of the more than 25 years old RFC mentioned telephone numbers in passing. The fact that this RFC was specifying the requirements for a database of 100 people was not enough to stop people using it as a hammer. So the reason why the Whois protocol got revised to RFC 3912 was to remove things that people had no intention of saying. That's a bit of history. So the protocol has gotten extended over the years. Unfortunately, the first extension was basically that Europeans started using it. At the time, Europeans used extended Latin character set called 8859-1, which is actually useful for writing French, English, Scandinavian languages, and Italian. Useless for Eastern Europe, but they were on the other side of the Iron Curtain at the time, so they didn't matter. Also useless for Welsh, but they were so few they didn't matter. But it is useful for Icelandic, because the Icelanders were actually present at the committee when the character set was established. But since Whois was the protocol that is so simple, repeat, there was no way of saying that you wanted this character set. You just sent the query in, and you got the response back in ISO 8859-1. Remember, this was before Unicode and UTF-8 were defined. So when the internet became slightly more international, people discovered that they couldn't put their data in Whois and be compatible with the ripe Whois or West European Whois. And some people just started sending UTF-8. Some people threw up their hands and said, a curse on both their houses and will just deliver ASCII no matter what it should have been. These decisions were left to registrars, registries, and RIRs. So in order to even display the result coming back from this very simple protocol on the screen, you had to have a personal knowledge of the decisions made by the guy running that other server. And you had no way in the protocol of asking him. There were several attempts to define Whois-like protocols that were somewhat more capable. Those include RWhois, Whois++, a couple of things that got RFC's numbers but no names. But none of them had significant uptake. And the thing is that there was so much Whois out in the world that nobody could force anyone to change. So nothing changed. And that's where we are today. We actually have fairly useful automatic tools, like the Whois client on my machine is able to go to one Whois server and ask it about the domain name, figure out what the response actually means, and pick out another Whois server from the output of that query and go to that server. So people hack around the most amazing inconsistencies, but it's a very fragile thing and not something that any software engineer would recommend. The bad guys, those who harvest databases and do all sorts of things with them, don't see this as a particular limitation. When you're a criminal, you shouldn't stop doing something just because it's not elegant. So, the lack of standardization is no advantage. Next page. And of course, as I said, when you start off with something that's defined in ASCII, start using it with other character sets without telling anyone else what you're doing, you get something that's inconsistent. And if people want to have processable information or information they can format, well, knowing the character set is kind of necessary. And not only do you have no way to specify the character set of the output, you have no way of specifying the character set of the input. You send in a query, and you have no way to tell the server what character set it was intended to be in. The result is that most useful things you can query through the Whois service have ASCII names. Next page. And of course, one line of ASCII doesn't have a username and a password, and it shouldn't have it, because you never send usernames and passwords in the clear unless you want to give them away. Which means that the fact that the one line of text is not encrypted and the server does not expect it to be encrypted is a problem. And since you have no way of telling the other guy who you are or what you're authorized to do, well, the other guy has to assume that you're anybody and are authorized to do what anyone can do. So, again, it's not that there's some missing functionality. It's that the functionality groups you're looking for are not there and cannot be added. So, to make a long story short, if you want to, and let me get the terminology straight, use a Whois service to get access to the domain registration data stored in the directory services data model, the Whois data representation is not the representation you're looking for. Find something else. And with that, I'll leave it to questions and my next presenter.
Harold, thank you very much for using all of our defined terminology. I even followed that. So do we have any questions for Harold before we move on to the next presentation, which will Harold's very kindly identified some of the issues, or I'm supposed to say challenges, I think, not issues, opportunities. And Francisco Arias and Steve Sheng to my right. Oh, I do have a question, Jay.
Yeah. Since when has Whois had a use case of needing authentication?
Jay, this is Francisco. Actually, in the utility world, there are two cases, .tel and .name. They have specific needs for authenticated access, and they, since the Whois protocol is not suitable for that, they are using only the web interface.
I think I would describe that as them having a use case for an authenticated directory service that they have chosen to use Whois for, which is not what Whois was intended for. And I would not agree that there is a use case for an authenticated Whois.
I would please ask you to phrase that in the terminology of this session. Are you talking about the Whois service, the Whois protocol, or access to registration data?
I think I used it the way I intended to use it.
Oh, you used Whois alone, which is a part of two of the
Whois service.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And Francisco is going to talk about some of the proposals that are out in the community and some analysis that's been done by Steve Sheng to my right and Francisco to my left. And then what we'd like to do is have a conversation. So, Francisco, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Liz. This is Francisco again. I just wanted to say first that this is an analysis that has been done, but not just Steve and me, but a lot of other technical staff inside ICANN. And we have been consulting other experts, external experts. So in this presentation, I'm going to talk about the possible solutions that we have identified. We are going to present a comparison of the options, and we are going to talk shortly about the next steps. Possible solutions, number one maybe, would be to extend the Whois protocol in some way. Another option will be to use the IRIS protocol that is already specified by the IETF. A third option will be, and this might be considered the new entrant here, is to use RESTful Whois. I will talk about that later. And of course, we are open to hear from the community what we might be missing here. Talking about the first option, extending Whois, we could try to work with the community to revise and extend the Whois specification. The specification will need to include something like version selection, given that the fact that the current user base, the current client, Whois clients, are using the protocol the way it's defined now. And the new specification will have to use something that will probably make them obsolete. We also think that the authentication and access control part would be a little bit difficult to add to something like Whois. IRIS, as we mentioned before, at the time about 5 years ago, if I remember correctly, was developed as a successor to WHOIS. There was an ITF process in which the requirements for a successor to WHOIS were defined, and eventually IRIS came out as the solution. IRIS requires a specialized client and server. It uses XML encoding for the queries and results. IRIS, as I mentioned before, addresses the deficiencies of the WHOIS protocol by using XML encoding for both the query and responses to support multiple languages. It also specifies a well-defined structure for the query and result sets, and it supports authentication and access control in its application transport layer protocol. The third option, RESTful WHOIS. I must say that RESTful WHOIS is another name for a web-based WHOIS. What we mean by RESTful WHOIS is a web-based WHOIS, meaning a WHOIS interface that is running in HTTP, the protocol for the web, and conforms to a set of specifications that are called REST. REST is not a new term. This has been there for, I think it was defined, it was first presented in 2000, I'm not exactly sure, in a doctoral a thesis by one of the authors of the HTTP protocol. The idea with RESTful WHOIS is that it can be queried using web browsers or command line tools that are already available in most operating systems. The queries are expressed in a URL or URI, as you can see over there. So you could have a standardized URI for the WHOIS in the web. The responses are in XML and can also be in HTML in order to support something that is more user-friendly. RESTful WHOIS also addresses the deficiencies of WHOIS by using XML or HTML for responses, so it supports multiple languages, character encodings, and it specifies a well-defined structure for result sets. And since it's using HTTP, the transport for RESTful WHOIS, it already supports authentication and access control. So for those TLDs that require this functionality, they can use the HTTP functionality. So in summary, extending WHOIS could address the technical deficiencies, but would require a significant change in the protocol, which will leave the client base obsolete. IRIS, on the other hand, has the most features and is easily extensible, but is perceived as costly to implement, and there are no readily available resources. RESTful WHOIS, on the other hand, has a number of features that addresses the deficiencies of WHOIS, just like IRIS. It's extensible to accommodate future improvements and can be achieved at a reasonable cost. It would basically integrate what is currently now two separate things, the current WHOIS protocol and the web-based interface for that. There is already a production implementation for ARIN, the regional IP registry for North America, and RIPE already has a pilot implementation. RIPE is the regional IP registry for Europe and Middle East. We in ICANN also have a pilot implementation. So, finally, next steps. At this point, we staff are seeking feedback from the community, WHOIS users, and I'm using here WHOIS in the most open way. Registries, GTLDs and CCTLDs, of course, registrars, RIRs, and any other interested party in this community. We have four questions here that we would like to ask people. And first one, have we currently summarized the problems of the WHOIS protocol? Are there any other technical problems of the WHOIS protocol that we have missed? Question number two, have we currently identified the potential solution space? Are there any other viable solutions that we have not identified? And number three, for the solutions that we identified, is our analysis correct? Are we missing something here? And number four, which of the three identified options is the most adequate and why? We are... We published a report. It's on the page of this meeting. We purposely didn't use the public comment tools that normally are used in ICANN because this is not a policy effort, but it's just trying to get feedback from the community on what to do on technical terms. So I will encourage you to read that report and provide feedback to Steve or me by email.
Thanks, Francisco. Will you move back to your questions, and then I'll call on the gentleman at the end of the table? Could you put the slide up with your questions, please? Thank you. Yes, and you have a question, or you had your hand raised, or a statement?
I have a couple of questions and a statement or two as well. I'm Michael Young with Affilius. The statement I'd like to say is, first of all, I'm going to raise a couple of hard questions, but I want to start out by declaring myself as friendly to the process and that, yes, the existing WHOIS has distinct problems that need to be addressed. The simplest and the most concentrated issue at hand right now is IDN support. We are trying to... The entire community is trying to support the advent of IDN.IDN, and the current WHOIS just does not handle that primary use case. So that alone is a very, very good reason for making changes or accommodating issues around WHOIS. Having said that, I'm a bit of a stickler for process, and I think I believe in process, and I'm a little concerned when I look at the original GNSL Council resolution. That we're not entirely clear here at this stage in the game of who's sponsoring the next step of the work and what the next step of the work should be. And I think that we need to clarify that and make sure, I'm not going to read out the language of the resolution that's in the WHOIS, it's reiterated in the WHOIS service requirements report, but it does refer to and maybe one sentence that's important is that it does refer to the need to support various policy initiatives that have been suggested in the past. So separating just this technical work from policy requirements, and having built a lot of products, technology products over the years, I think you always need two things if you're going to build anything in technology. You need a sponsor, who you're building it for, and you need to understand that sponsor's needs, which are your requirements. So... is there any such thing as pure technical requirements? I would say no. There's no point in building technology if you don't have a need, a real-world need, to address in the first place. We need to make sure that we don't disconnect those two. Having said that, I am agreeing with this work, and I want to see an effort go forward. But I just think we need to be very clear on that, because if we aren't, we're getting a lot of objections from people. And this is going to slow down because they feel like we're not... we don't have a clear direction. We don't have a clear mandate to make changes around WHOIS. So now putting my technical hat on, because I am a technologist.
I'm had me fooled.
So now I'm going to be a bit head for a few seconds. I'm not exactly sure I agree that that IRIS is more costly than RWS. I am going to say that it's possible to express IRIS over REST as well. So it's possible to express anything over REST. That's the whole point to REST. It's a framework. And it's meant to be flexible for that purpose. I see nothing in in the presentation of this report that clarifies those costs or why we're saying that IRIS is more expensive. I also think that RWS has got a lot of hidden costs because ultimately you have to do a lot of things at the server level. And it needs to be addressed either way, whether or not you do it for IRIS or whether or not you go back and you adjust your woefully inadequate Whois server underneath the RWS to deal with a whole bunch of these considerations. Still, the work still needs to be done. And I'm just very keen, being a long-term IETFer as well, I'm very keen on not ever going back to the IETF and trying to explain to them why we did all that work on IRIS, because I was involved in that, and never even really gave it a try. Thanks.
Okay, so if I could try and summarize, I think on the technical point is that you are saying that in our analysis, the analysis that was put up on the slides and in the paper, that you would like to emphasize that it's costly in both cases of IRIS or RWS. If we're just comparing apples and oranges, they both have costs associated, and that it's not reflected in our analysis. That's one point. And the second point is that it's a process point of moving the technology into the IETF, you're concerned that IRIS hasn't been given a fair shake yet, and so therefore you're not sure you'd like to, explore another technical solution until IRIS kind of got a fair shake. Did I summarize it pretty well, or did I miss something?
No, I think you did a great job. That's pretty much what I was trying to express, and I like the term fair shake with IRIS because, the reality is the IETF is very has a very high bar to get new work into it, particularly. Let's say we take a good look at IRIS and we give IRIS a fair shake and it has deficiencies. The first inclination of the IETF process is that we see whether or not IRIS is fixable, if you will, to start with, rather than redo work unnecessarily. And I think that's a good premise. I also really like the idea of using REST. I think that can help with adoption at the Whois client level, so I want to say that from a technical perspective. I think I'm very much in support of that. But the biggest benefit for REST is, I think, at the adoption side for the Whois client, because it makes it cheap for those people who are trying to interact with a Whois service, to hopefully using the right terminology there.
Thanks, Michael. Well, I had two people in the queue. I have Patrick, and then Jay, and then Wilfred, and then Kathy. Okay, so now I have four.
Patrick Jones with ICANN staff. This was a really good session, and it's unfortunate that more of the community that's interested in Whois in the broadest sense isn't here. So I wonder, what is the mechanism for this group to report back to those supporting organizations, advisory committees, and other interested parties that are active in this area? So have you planned that out, and what the next step is for this topic?
Steve? Let me quickly respond. We have circulated the document with registries and registrars and RARs in this instance. We're also planning to circulate the document for other constituencies that are users of the Whois community. So just to quickly respond.
Hopefully that's a sufficient answer, and if not, we can consider other opportunities. Jay, you're next up.
Thank you. Before we get on to the merits of different solutions, which I think is far too premature to do, I think we need to look at the problem space and particular question 1A. By the way, I make that 7 questions, not 4. Have we correctly summarised the problems of the Whois protocol? And the word protocol there is quite important. My answer is no. Of the problems that are identified, some are to do with the Whois service and some are to do with the Whois protocol, and those are quite different. The Whois protocol ones are, first of all, authentication, which I would say is out of scope. It's not a use case for it. The second one is about limiting rate control, those type of things, which multiple registries have done independently of the protocol, so is not in scope for the protocol. And the third one is encoding, and that is a very serious issue for us. All of the other issues that have been raised are about the Whois service, and can be effectively dealt with by standardisation of the Whois data representation and the directory services data model underneath it, quite straightforwardly. And we need to separate those out so that we understand exactly what might require us to move to a different protocol. Because as far as I can see, the only one that we cannot tackle through Whois in the way we have it so far is encoding. Everything else can be dealt with quite neatly.
Okay, thank you. So I think you've summarized your stance on this, that there's only encoding, and that's the only thing that would drive us to consider another technical solution. Have I captured that?
No.
Oh, geez,
sorry,
I tried.
It's not technical solution. That's very clearly the wrong word. It's a new protocol. There is definitely a technical solution that we can do, which is in terms of the directory services data model and the Whois data representation that would solve most of those issues that are given there. Okay. The authentication one, just to be clear, I don't think is in scope. I think that's a separate area one. And it's the protocol. The only thing that needs to be done there that might require a separate protocol is encoding. But that's the one that it can't be done in band in any way.
Okay, thank you. Wilford, then Kathy, then Harold. Did I have anyone who wanted to get in the queue? Okay. I don't know your name, but I know who you are. What? Bernard, thank you.
Yeah, I've got three minor things. First of all, to identify myself, I'm one of the co-chairs of the RIPE database working group. That's the party that tries to keep track of the IP address registry for the European service region, or the RIPE NCC service region. One small observation to begin with, I'm a little bit puzzled, and it may just be an editing issue, with regard to the RESTful service, that there is only HTTP as a protocol. I would suggest that this should explicitly include HTTPS, because whatever we want potentially to build on top of this transport layer might be useful to have sort of the S capabilities on the transport thing. But I guess this is just sort of an editing thing. But as we try to get stuff down into the backs of our heads, we might want to do that consciously also with HTTPS. The second structural question here is, with my head of a resource registry working group chair, what would be the appropriate process to get involved with this whole game? Because it's more or less a coincidence that I'm sitting in this room. The coincidence being that I'm on the RT Whois policy review team together with Katie, and sort of the Whois abbreviation triggered me to just listen in, and I'm certainly very much interested in following up, because we have a proposal in our service region at the moment from an individual from Poland to start working on allowing, whatever the mechanism would be eventually, allowing more than 7-bit ASCII to be used in the registry data. And of course, if you use the data in the registry itself, you want to have the mechanisms to properly ship that to the querying end and to the consumer's end. So that was item two. And the third one is maybe a little bit a provocative one. I was a couple of years ago involved in the attempts to make Iris fly. It failed miserably from my vantage point. So while I appreciate the fact that Iris is again on the list of potential solutions, and as there was already the suggestion from gentlemen at the end of this side of the table to give it another shake, I would like to hear a little bit of feedback from the people collecting the list of potential solutions, why Iris is presented sort of on the same level of potential to solve the problems. Because the community had the chance to deploy Iris, it didn't do it. So I'm wondering, is there any good reason why we could expect that the community would try to deploy Iris now? Thank you.
Okay, we have a response from Michael, who actually made that comment. So Michael, Wilford, Michael.
Thank you. I think there's a very plain reason why it hasn't been adopted to date. It costs money, and there's no reason to until IDNs came into play. There just wasn't enough motivation. Is there anything wrong with actual Iris as an implementation? I don't see anything wrong with it as a technologist or as a registry operator. where am I going to pay the money to put it in play, which is, you know, an initial cost until there is a defined benefit from it, either for the community or for my customers? No. So we didn't. Now that we have IDNs in play, there's a use case for it, there's a need for it, there's another level of motivation. So, yeah, it could succeed now. But without a reason, why would you, without a strong, compelling reason, nothing's going to move forward. And now we have a reason on the table, so I think it's worth looking at.
Okay, thank you, Michael. And Jay would like to make a comment also to Michael or to Wilfred?
Sorry, very briefly.
Okay, so then we'll close this to go to our next question.
Yeah, very briefly. I was one of those people who built an Iris server only to see it not used. And the reason for that was that Iris is fundamentally different from Whois because it introduces authentication model. And that's not just a simple bit of technology. That's changing your entire back-end processes to support that. And that's a huge thing. That's why, I mean, my view is that Iris, as I said in the previous meeting, is not only dead, but its body's been burnt and ashes scattered to the four winds, okay? You know, we really do not need to be playing with that again.
I think you have a very strong opinion there. So I have someone else who'd like to get in the queue. I know you sit next to Wilfred, and then you can tell me your name. Kathy, I believe you're next, then Harold, then Bernard, and then the man next to Wilfred.
Francisco.
Okay, got it.
Great. Thanks. Kathy Kleiman again with .org. And my disclaimer is I am a policy person. I was a technologist a long time ago. I'm now a policy person. So coming in with a different set of questions. I'm also a veteran of many of the last 8 years of the Whois Wars. And so lots of questions coming in from the policy side. But let me start with a few questions. The presentation was done, a wonderful presentation was done to the Registry Stakeholder Group. And questions were raised. And I actually came here maybe to see some of those answers. And I'm not seeing them. So let me add questions again. Michael Young raised a number of them in the Registry Stakeholder Group. But questions, what are the business specifications? What are we looking for to solve so that we can measure it against Aaron or the RESTful Whois? What specific things are you looking to add? Are we looking to add as a community? It'd be nice to see a checklist. What are the intended policy implications? We're discussing and debating Whois throughout ICANN. Policy and technology can't be separated. We do technology policy here. What do you see as the policy implications? So what additional facilities and features will be available under these two different protocols that we're now evaluating? They will have an enormous impact on the policy discussions now taking place. One thing that we also need to evaluate is what are some of the unintended policy consequences? If you deploy something and it impacts something in a way that wasn't intended, that could have huge implications on the policy side. So let me throw these questions in about the business implications, the policy implications, both that were intended and unintended, because I think this is a discussion the community will need to have.
Good. I thought I kicked my plug out. The policy questions, I think we are going to have to defer to a different session, though I do hear everyone saying that it's better to have a more explicit requirement statement, at which point we could go back to the groups and then raise that and say, what policy issues do you see if we were to implement these types of requirements in a protocol of some sort? So I would like to defer the policy statement till we respond to the questions to have more explicit requirements defined up front. So, and then I wanted to go back to Wilfred's question that I didn't answer, which he said, what's the mechanism to provide feedback? And I know both Francisco and Steve had put their email addresses up, but since this does seem like to be a topic that would generate a good conversation, and online is the way we all live today, perhaps what we can do is put together a mailing list that could be generated towards this topic of gathering the requirements that would then filter into this technical analysis for a potential solution space. Okay? So I'm sorry, Wilfred, that I'd skipped that. Now moving on to Harold.
So the horse of requirements has already been kicked so much that it doesn't need it anymore. Of course, I disagree totally and utterly and completely with my friend down the table about whether port 43 should ever be used for anything ever again. But I think we need to check the installed base as a requirement for getting our requirements, and if we are willing to check the installed base of who is clients, then moving to another protocol is feasible. The thing that bothers me about RVS is that there's no spec. There's an implementation, there's no spec, which makes it a bit hard for me as a professional spec reader to evaluate. So one of the things that has to be done to expose the hidden costs that were referred to earlier, if they exist, is surface the spec. I've encountered a few cases in the past where the spec turns out to be identical to the code, which has its own strange dialectics, but actually works sometimes. But no spec, no evaluation. That's all for me.
Thanks, Harold. But I actually thought that was the ITF way, you know, running code and then you get the spec. No? I'm sorry, that's tongue-in-cheek.
Yep, we run around that circle several times. Usually it's first you have the implementation, then you have the spec, and then you have the requirements, and then you throw away the spec, and then you throw away the implementation.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be silly. Bernard, and then we have Francisco after that, and then we have an online question.
It's Werner Stahl from CORE. I'm in charge of the Secretariat of CORE, which handles, amongst other things, a registrar channel, specifically respect to customer support. In the registrar channel, those customers not being direct customers of ours, but people who strand because they have a problem and have to be helped. And I can tell you that if you see things from that perspective, namely numerically, the perspective that is probably way more important than what happens on the servers, because these are the many people, the millions of people who somehow have a problem with the domain name. There is one requirement that I see has just simply been forgotten, and that is we need a URI that is containing the query in the URI so they can be short and transmitted in text messages or emails or whatever. And it must be something where the user is not told, oh, please go to the such and such server. Then you enter something, wait until you get the response, or other things that put us back to the times before the web came along. So the URI is a fundamental requirement, because it is needed by all the people who help customers. The customer himself, of course, doesn't know he needs it, but there's absolutely no way to deal with things if you don't have that. RWS does have that, and that's why I'm enthusiastically, you know, in favor of it, notwithstanding other problems that there may be. I'll leave it at that. Okay.
Okay, thank you. And that, I'm sure Francisco and Steve are collecting that information for requirements. Moving to Francisco. Thank you.
Hi. This is Francisco Obispo from ISC. And, I'm very impressed with this meeting, and I actually appreciate that this has been taken care of. I will say first that being a person that likes to look forward and not back, I will just make a suggestion that we should not keep beating who is to death. We should, you know, let it die. And I see basically two things here. One is that one thing is actually that I think we also missed an issue of who is, which is escalation. And I've heard a lot of registries mention this in the past. Trying to provide high availability services and provide high response or low response times is very complicated, because the protocol itself is very different from all the things that we know how to do. For example, web services, we know how to do web stuff, so. There's caching technology. There's many things that could make this problem much more simpler. The only issue I see so far with RWS would be that, as the other person said, that there is no format specified yet.
Exactly.
So I'm a little worried that there are already at least two pilot implementations, and I'm not sure if they are using the same format already. So if they're not, we're going to run into the same issues in 10 years, because we're going to have this wonderful protocol and that everybody's using then their own XML implementation. So we definitely need to standardize that. And I would just suggest that if Iris, I mean, I'm sure that there's already a lot of work done into Iris with defining schemas and things like that. And if we could somehow reuse that or try to take whatever is useful from that part and adopt it on top of RWS, we could be looking in the future at something that will probably solve most of these issues. So,
thank you. I think, Francisco, you wanted to reply or no? And then, I'm sorry, and you'll be after the online person and after Jay.
Yes, just to small comment. RESTful, who has been mentioned, has not been specified, and it's something that we talk about with RIRs in the past IDF meeting in Beijing. And although I cannot speak for them, but I could say that I got the impression while talking with them that they are interested in working in specifying a RESTful quiz.
Okay, thank you. Steve, if you'd read the online question and who sent it in.
There's a question from Dave Pistello. How would Iris fit into a service model that's oriented to web users? And then there's quite a flurry of discussions and comments between Kathy. Maybe you want to raise a question in the room. I don't know which question you're trying to.
But it's not Kathy's turn. So if she's responding to Dave, she can respond to Dave. Otherwise, I'll put you in the list for your question, okay? How would you like to do
that's
that, Kathy?
It's just a response about what's going on in the room, which is just that I was told by Kim Von Arks, who was also on the Who Is review team, that he couldn't hear what I said, so I just typed it up.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Kathy. So, Michael, would you like to respond to Dave Piscatello, because you seem to be the most knowledgeable about Iris at the moment?
Yeah, please. I also want to just emphasize, I don't want to come across as a Iris flag waver here. I just want to look at things very objectively and cleanly. Dave, the answer is that, you know, Iris can be implemented as a server, and a REST implementation can be applied to an Iris implementation. Iris over REST, if you will, is quite possible. So, I mean, in technical terms, what people actually think of it like an API or a specified API into a server, and you can have various flavors of APIs into the same server. So there's flexibility here. I want people to realize that REST is very flexible and can sit on top of anything. It's a framework. That's the whole point to it.
Okay, thank you. I think that also speaks to something Francisco was trying to say. So my next person in line is Jay and then Federico.
Hi, this is Jay. I just wanted to go to Francisco's point about who is and scalability and high performance. Who is the simplest protocol out there, and for those of us who've been managing it for years, making it highly available and making it high performance is something we've been very good at doing. Yes, it's different to learning a web-based service, but it's actually simpler and easier to do. And there are, I mean, I don't agree effectively then with your point that there's any, that it's a more complex, more difficult protocol, you know, compared to anything else. It's trivial virtually to do those things with it.
Okay, thank you for commenting directly. And Federico.
I would like to make some points, at least.
regarding the comment the gentleman on the right made regarding the support URI, I would like to make two points, actually. I think this is correct. This is really important, especially having a kind of compact one. And I'm definitely sure that Iris provide this to us. But the main problem is that the support protocol, at least the one that is specified today, it's BEEP. And we don't have general availability of clients of BEEP, and especially ones that understand the current specification. And but regarding Michael's comment of using the Iris encoding or specification, not on the transport side, but on the query side and response, I would point out that actually the current specification for domain name, it's called DREG, and actually at the time we ended it in 2004, we found that it was not good enough, and we started to do one. I'm one of the co-authors of the DREG 2 that was trying to solve of these problems, and I could tell you that it's through GTLD specific, the current one, and I would tell you that we would probably have trouble to make it more generic. So I'm not quite sure it would be a good venue or a way of moving forward, putting the old specification that we have at the time. And especially I could point out that the DREG specification doesn't have anything about DNSSEC and other things. And so trying to reuse it over a new transport, being a HTTP-based RESTful service, I'm not quite sure that this would be the best approach. But a last clarification on my point. I think the RESTful option could probably be a good one.
Thank you for that clarification. I have Francisco, and then I've got Michael, and then I have this gentleman.
This is Francisco. Fred and others in the room, the other option that was mentioned, instead of using Iris XML schemas by Francisco Bispo, was EPP. What do you think about that?
I will allow the answer.
I don't think this is a good match too, because it's we have other things like the current implementation actually is an implementation for a directory services over a RESTful interface for IP blocks and actually AS numbers, the one that Arin is the service that Arin is providing, and we barely have a specification for this over EPP. So I don't think this is a good match to a reuse of this. But anyway, we to be precisely about this, we have actually drafting specification for EPP for IP addresses and ASN, so I'm not, this is not a self-serving, actually it's a non-self-serving comment, actually, because we are proposing this for the EPP.
Okay, thank you. Michael?
I just want to say I agree with what you're saying. I'm very well aware of the shortcomings of Iris. What I was trying to get at with Iris is sometimes we do a lot of work and we have a lot of painful learning on these things, and we say, okay, let's just start from scratch again. And somehow, by starting from scratch again, we throw away that painful learning and we make the same mistakes all over again in a new working group, which has happened at the IETF routinely. So I would really, as a more generic goal, like to avoid is if there are good things, and I'm not saying we should use Iris. I'm saying if there are good things or learning that we took from Iris, I don't want to walk away from the ballot work and the learning that we had there. I want to make sure it gets reincorporated and reused in anything that we do that is a complete solution to the problem set.
Okay, thank you. And, sir?
My name is Bob Hutchinson. I guess hearing the discussion, I would like to recommend that the group look forward to reference implementations of the different competing services and allow the community to examine them and vote on what implementation for the service layer they would prefer.
Very interesting suggestion. Thank you. So it appears we have no more questions at this point in time. I think it's been a very... Oops, I have one more. Federico. Or did someone else? Are you pointing across the room?
I would like just to make a point about this comparison of competing implementations. I think, as some people have already said, Iris is a dead horse. We probably can find implementations or code in the attics of the control version systems of some registries. We had one, others had others, but I think this is, as I said, it's dead.
Okay, I've heard that a couple of times. Let's try not to beat it anymore. It's already dead, if that's the case. I'm not saying it is, but we can give up the beating right now. So, Jim, last comments, and then we'll try to come to a closure.
So question four up there asks the question, which is the most appropriate solution and why? And I think it's important to put that question in context. I guess maybe I should have raised this earlier than sort of ending on this point. So maybe this is just something to consider as we think about next steps and what we're doing. I would presume that that's a technical question. So it's a technical evaluation of the solutions. And I would think my first impression would be that that's getting into a scope issue in terms of what would ordinarily occur within the ICANN community and ICANN working groups. And so the question of whether or not Iris is dead or not is interesting input, but it's not clear to me that's a decision that this group or any working group that might come from it would make. In contrast, speaking to whether or not Whois is dead is an appropriate comment because it's a policy issue. I mean, as a policy issue, we have to support the Whois protocol. So it's appropriate to recognize that there's a policy question to be reexamined and then to say that that's not the one that we want to use and go forward with. And so that's what motivates future work and what we want to do with that. So I guess I'm questioning this last question here, and I want to suggest that we put some context around that last question and what it really means and what you're really trying to get from it, just to be clear that we're not actually trying to answer that question specifically, just get input towards exploring its answer.
Did you want to respond to that, or shall we take that as future discussions on the email list that we're going to create, that you're going to create? But I see another hand. We still have time.
It's a short comment to Jim, actually. I think Iris is definitely dead because it never get alive. And
come on, Frederico, yes. Give it up.
Okay,
take
no,
it to the coffee.
Another point. It will take a bunch of time to kill Whois, actually. Whois is pretty alive.
This sounds like a really interesting bar debate. So, and Jim, I really do take your question seriously. I wasn't trying to make light of it. So I do appreciate everyone's engagement in the discussion. I think Wilfred's comment that perhaps there needs to be a mechanism to continue the discussion, and I'd like to see if other people feel the same way because we don't want to try to force ourselves upon you. Yes, Jim? Or should I just ask for a show of hands? If people could just say, raise their hand if they would be willing to participate in the discussion, or if they're willing to be a lurker, that's okay too. Okay, great. So I don't know the process for setting up an email distribution list, so I'm process light. But
ask them to come and
right.
I'll collect the emails.
All right, Jim, yes?
Yes. Please suggest, is suggesting that if people interested could send us an email where to Steve or me, and we could take care of the setting up the mailing list. Oops. I'm trying to show it there.
There are the two email addresses. You may send to one or the other, at which point we'll collect names and create a distribution list and send a test mail to make sure that you all receive it. And if you don't receive a test mail with a distribution list, please spam these guys, and then they'll take care of it. Yes, Jim.
So, Jim Galvin, thank you. And I want to go back now to the very first comment that was made, and it was my colleague over here that made it and raise a process issue. And it's interesting to say we're going to have a mailing list and we're going to have some discussion, but I think it is important to understand what is the goal of this discussion, in what context is the discussion occurring, and you know, who owns the discussion, if you will. And I think that's important. There have been WHOIS-related discussions going on in ICANN for a long time, and it's time to, you know, context this in a way and scope it in a way that ensures we're going to come to closure. And that's my big concern. So while it's interesting to create a mailing list in which we're all going to talk, what exactly does that mean, and why are we doing it?
Okay, I'm going to defer to my colleague Liz to my left, because I'm a substitute chair for this, and it's been fun for me, but she has all the details.
Well, I'm not sure that's the case. It's Liz Gaster with the ICANN policy staff. I think, you know, our purpose in bringing this to you over the last few weeks and today, you know, is to encourage the kind of discussion that we're having today. And we'd like to facilitate more discussion, but we really do want to, you know, evolve towards moving the discussion to all of you. So the answer, you know, this isn't a perfect answer, but the answer is we don't want the ICANN staff to be driving this. We would like the community to be driving this. We wanted to facilitate a discussion, encourage a discussion. I think the turnout here was extraordinarily good, and that the comments made today are very thoughtful and complex. And what I would really urge is, if there is interest, to think about how the community might lead a discussion effort, and for the community to think about what the charter for that might be. We're happy to help and support that, which is why we wanted to bring that to you today. And we can provide, after this meeting, over the next few weeks, maybe some options for how to do that, including perhaps a follow-up workshop in San Francisco. I will assure you that on this draft discussion paper that Francisco and Steve have circulated and that is posted publicly, we will make an effort to collect your comments in a systematic way as part of the listserv and more broadly, and to produce an updated draft discussion document prior to the San Francisco meeting. But beyond that, it would be helpful to get some guidance from you about what you think the next step should be and how this should go forward. Thanks.
Okay, so I'm next on the list. And I think what I totally agree with what Liz has just proposed. But I think we've also got the opportunity and the goal of listening to what you've said about collecting the requirements. And often, in order to collect requirements, you have to have a smaller group, and then you kind of draft a straw person, and then you take that straw person to the other supporting organizations. And I think that speaks to what Kathy said, whereas if this group that obviously is invested and has an opinion from both the technology side as well as the customer side as well as the business side can communicate like we were today, we can take your input, add that to the document and the analysis, and then take that to the other supporting organizations for their feedback and how it might interrelate with policies, etc. So I don't know. That seemed to me to be the gist of what we were saying. But Michael, you want to say something else? And Jim, I don't know if that responds to your question.
Again, I'm fully in support in solving these problems, so please take that into account with what I'm about to say. Since this original,
it's always that second shoe's going to drop.
That's right. It is a second shoe. I do feel I have to, as an RYSG representative as well, I think I have to point out that the initial report was mandated by a GNSO Council resolution. And are we out of scope here? do we have a mandate? Do we need to get support from the council to take next steps? Or is this still considered within that original resolution?
What resolution are you referring to, sorry?
The one that was backing the inventory of WHOIS service requirements, which I understood was, you know, really kind of where we got the requirements and the work scope for some of this stuff.
I would say that they are distinct efforts, but that the WHOIS service requirements report provides a useful underlying reference for the discussion on requirements. The service requirements report was requested by the GNSO Council. The work is delivered on that and complete, and the Council has not taken up next steps on that. Again, I don't mean to be evasive. What I'm really saying is kind of turning it back to you. The Council has not really discussed that. If you all think that this is consistent with kind of the direction that that's going in, I think it would be very appropriate for you through your GNSO Council members and community to suggest that this discussion be continued and to pursue this line of thinking in the context of that. It can also be a, you know, separate discussion group. It can be there are a number of different options for sort of the forum for this. And I don't think we have a direct answer, again, for, you know, what is the right forum. I think there are a number of options for where the forum could actually be. It may not even be ICANN, you know, coordinated kind of thing. It may be something that the community wants to do, all of you want to do independently. I think that's an open issue.
Okay, thank you for that answer. I'm very keen to contribute to the work here and resolve some issues. So I just would hate for someone to feel like we've circumvented. You know, we get a lot of good work done, and then it all gets put on hold because there's a feeling from some, either the community at large or some representation of certain portions of the community that we somehow didn't follow an adequate process.
Just as an aside, one of the things in the GNSO improvements effort that some of you may be familiar with is this whole idea that we really need to circulate ideas in the community before they kind of reach a crescendo of initiating a GNSO process. That sometimes those of you who are familiar with the policy development process specified in Annex A of the bylaws applicable to the GNSO know that once you start that path of initiating an issues report, bringing that issues report to the council, having the council vote on a working group or next steps has implications and is very clearly kind of a policy process. The GNSO improvements effort recognized that these issues are very complex that we're dealing with, that we need technical and policy input, perhaps a sufficient record to even begin to, say, write an issues report. So while I realize there's a sort of nebulousness about, okay, what is the next step for this, I think what we're trying really hard to do is say, before we assume that there's an obvious next step or that this belongs in the GNSO versus the ESSEC versus the IETF versus anywhere else, we want to, you know, not jump to any of those conclusions and say, you know, first at the very nascent baby step, is this something we should be talking about as a community? How do we do that and kind of create a foundation for any kind of further discussion? And as someone who's had to try to write issues reports in the GNSO in the absence of a sufficient community discussion or foundation, that's exceedingly difficult to do. So we're plowing a bit of new ground here in terms of the process, but I'm fairly confident that this isn't really going to fall out of process. It's going to get into a process once you all help us figure out what makes sense.
Thank you. I'll sleep better at night now.
So I want to say thank you all for your participation. We are now finished.